Portage Health Foundation is excited to announce six projects sharing more than $105,000 in investments, covering a wide range of improvements to recreational opportunities in Michigan's Copper Country. Projects include accessibility upgrades to Second Sands Beach in Lawns Township, a new groomer for Adventure Mountain, new signage for QAnon Nordic Ski Club, an outdoor ice rink that will launch this winter at Horizon School, recently completed trail upgrades in Copper Harbor, and site updates to Camp Josh in Onondaga County. Learn more at phfgive.org.
Welcome back to segment two of Copper Country Today, brought to you, of course, by the Portage Health Foundation. Learn more about them at phfgive.org. A major report was released within the past few days by a consortium of healthcare providers, hospitals, things like that across the Upper Peninsula. They're calling it the Upper Peninsula Health Data Report, I think is what they're calling it. And it's a mere 458 pages long. And so I thought the best person I knew to help parse this out is Kate Beer, the Western UP Health Department health officer. So I invited her in to help kind of work through this and see where exactly we stand on health issues across the Upper Peninsula. So, Kate, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you, Todd. So glad to be here.
Well, it's good to have you back in person. We talked so many times by phone as the pandemic got started over the past several years. It's good to have you here in person again.
Yeah, so it's great to connect.
Let's, before we get into this 450-odd page report, let's update a little bit about the COVID-19 situation, if we can. Things have kind of calmed down a little bit, and yet we still have cases. We still have a few people being hospitalized because of this. Is it fair to say that at this point we still need to be vigilant, but we don't need to be scared?
Yes, we can say that, you know, we don't need to be scared. However, if we look at the raw data right now in the last few weeks, we're actually at levels that we were sustaining last fall. So we have seen numbers creep up a little bit. What we're not seeing is people being hospitalized as much.
That was my point.
Yes.
Are we seeing, and this was something that was speculated as we went into the pandemic, that kind of typically with these things, the viruses as they mutate become a little less virulent over time.
They can. And, you know, the vaccinations have helped quite a bit. You know, we have been actually seeing an uptick a little bit in hospitalizations the last few days, which is probably an uptick of like five or six people. But in general, that would be for the whole UP.
You know, as I'm looking at statewide statistics, I am noticing that our vaccination levels in this part of the state are relatively low compared to some other parts of the state. Our infection rates are relatively high.
Yes.
Compared to the rest of the state. Is that a real corollary, or is that just coincidental?
No, we believe that that's a corollary, you know, but what we are seeing is, of course, that people aren't as sick as the new variants come about. And it's hit or miss. Some people are very sick, but some people aren't sick hardly at all. So we're also finding, too, with the new BA5 variants, that people can get reinfected rather quickly. So they may not be out for 90 days. They may actually be able to contract it again within a few weeks.
Yeah, we still have a lot to learn about this, and we knew that going into this as well. Viruses are unpredictable. They're extremely adaptable. They can do some pretty amazing things, frankly. They're pretty amazing little creatures.
They are, and I think we had that you're right, we had that conversation our first go-round was we don't know enough yet.
Yeah.
And we're, over 2 years in, and we're smarter, and we've worked really hard, and I think we're at a place where we will see where this is just more of an endemic into our population, you know, and that's the scary part, is figuring out what that level is for us right now.
And this is obviously, at this point, something that we're going to be living with for a long time. This is not something that's going to flash in the pan and go away.
No, that's what really endemic is that we will always see some sort of a level of COVID-19 within the community. It's yet to be determined what that average level will be and if there's a seasonality to this.
Like the flu.
Correct.
Influenza, we tend to talk about flu season being through the winter.
Correct.
I'm not altogether sure why that is. Maybe because we're indoors more and we're exposed a little bit more closely to people more and more.
Right.
But it seems like every fall they say, okay, here's what we've identified and here's what's going to be included in the shot. And I suspect we'll see that with COVID over the next generation, maybe, is that they'll look and say, okay, this is the COVID that's kind of popping up. We're going to try to tailor our shot to that.
That would be the hope, that we would get to that point, but we're not seeing that seasonality yet where we would be able to say, well, here's your annual COVID / flu shot. We're not quite there yet.
No, well, historically, we're still very early.
Very, very early.
End of this.
Yes, and they are coming out with, you know, new vaccines every day, it seems. There's a new one out there now that is more based on the traditional way of making vaccines, like the traditional flu vaccine. So it's not based, it's based on the spike protein subunit, not the mRNA like the Moderna and Pfizer are.
Okay. All right. This has actually affected this significant report that has just come out. I know one of the bullet points that I looked over as I looked at the front end of it is we start to see some information being compiled about how the COVID-19 pandemic over its first months and maybe couple of years affected us here in the Upper Peninsula. How is it possible to set out the thumbnail sketch? How have we been affected by this physically and also perhaps emotionally?
Well, what we're seeing, especially in the health habits, are, you know, an increased use in substance use, those kind of things. I think it'll take a lot of time for us to kind of pull that out of there and figure out what is COVID-19 related. Or maybe what is secondary to that, what I mean by that is maybe somebody delayed care due to COVID-19 and now we're seeing other health issues because of that.
I can see a lot of dominoes that can fall mm-hmm. here. That's certainly one of them. The fact that people were isolated,
yes.
which for a lonely guy like me doesn't make a whole lot of difference, but for a lot of people, I know they really felt that. They couldn't get out and socialize. They couldn't get out and see the people that they normally saw, kids in school. You know, do we start to get a picture of how they were affected by this?
Not yet. Some of that data hasn't been taken yet, hasn't been surveyed yet, but what we are seeing is that people have identified as one of the health priorities in this survey as being the need for mental health services and programming within our community. And that's a shift than we saw in our 2018 survey, where people indicated that health insurance costs and the high cost of copays and deductibles was a big priority. That has shifted now into a little bit more into mental health services, substance use services, and dental services, actually.
Is this a bit of a win for us on some of those mental health issues? Because we have tried for years to destigmatize this, and now all of a sudden we see people thinking, hey, maybe this is something I need, maybe this is something that somebody I know needs, where 5 years ago, 10 years ago, it didn't come up.
Definitely. I think that that's what we're seeing, is that people are more willing now to reach out for services. And, you know, just that general discussion in the whole community has brought people to this level where they feel comfortable asking for services or encouraging other people to seek services.
And unfortunately, mental health services, that's an area where we in the Upper Peninsula have consistently kind of fallen short. There's not a lot of provision.
No, and you will see where we're trying within some of our community sectors to increase those programs and resources. Staffing has been a huge issue recently for us to find providers that can provide those services, both on a local level and, you know, even on a little bit higher level, as we see you know, some of these online platforms come about.
Well, I'm just going to ask you about that on a couple of levels. Baraga County Memorial Hospital is in the process now of contracting with online psychological support services mm-hmm. so that in their very rural setting, they have access 24/7 to somebody who can help them evaluate someone who comes in with mental issues. That's got to be a big step forward for a small hospital.
It is. It's a huge step forward to have that support, particularly in an emergent care situation. You know, but one of the things that we want to make sure that we have in place is aftercare. So a lot of times the reason somebody may end up in an emergency care situation is, you know, they quit taking their meds, or they had an event in their life that triggered something. And, you know, how do we manage that long-term care?
And, of course, there are now people advertising, companies advertising that you can see a board-certified counselor, psychologist, psychiatrist online. And you can set it up very quickly, and I'm thinking, okay, maybe this is legitimate, maybe this is not. Something we, I suppose, could be an asset here for those of us who don't necessarily have access to these people on a daily basis.
Yeah, so with COVID, we saw the advent of telehealth in all areas, and particularly mental health services, you know, did open that door a little bit broader for telehealth with mental health services. You know, I guess just like with anything else, it's kind of buyer beware, you know, making sure that the person that you're talking to is actually an accredited person and licensed individual.
And I suppose, too, you need to coordinate any online care that you're getting with any local care that you're getting. If I'm going to my regular primary care physician, I need to let them know that I'm doing this, and particularly if I'm getting any prescriptions or supplements or things like that I'm taking, that all has to be coordinated, and that's the patient's responsibility.
That's correct. You know, you need to make sure, particularly if you are on any sort of pharmaceuticals, that all of that is being managed properly, and that all the parties that are taking care of you are aware of those medicines.
Talking with Kate Beer, who is the health officer for the Western UP Health Department. New report is out basically summarizing where we stand health-wise across the Upper Peninsula. One of the things that did not surprise me was a focus on our aging population. We are getting older here in the UP. That, of course, means that we need more care, more people to provide that care. What kind of stresses are you seeing in that regard?
Well, you know, this is a trend that we saw in our previous assessment. It's continued in this assessment. And just like you mentioned, it's really that supportive care that people may need as they grow older, or that they have certain health conditions. And with the decline in population, we're really seeing it in the younger crowd. So, you know, where are these workers going to come from? And that was a big issue that a lot of places around here are trying to look at it, particularly NMU Center for Rural Health. They've got a pretty big workforce initiative going on. So all parties are concerned on that level, because it is going to be a huge stressor for us. We're already seeing shortages now within the nursing home arena, and it will just get worse as we go forward.
And of course, Finlandia University dedicated Hervin and Hall the other day. They're trying to boost up their nursing program, their health sciences program. So there are opportunities for young people if they want to go into that field, certainly right here in town.
Yes, definitely. You know, Gogebic and Finlandia both had long-standing nursing programs, and you know, it's very encouraging to see that they can keep those programs up and running in our area. That'll be a benefit for us going forward.
Yeah, for those of us who are getting older, please go out. You're going to have to take care of me anytime now. I'm going downhill fast, I think. What else struck you as this report came out?
So, you know, what really kind of things that we really need to be working on, a lot of it surrounds those social determinants of health. So another thing that has come out in this report, and we've kind of stretched that process a little bit further this time, is we've always known that a large number of our kids under 18 in our areas, up to around a quarter, 25%, live in poverty. But that's really magnified when you look at what a household really needs to survive nowadays in light of large inflation numbers.
And yeah, the poverty line, it's not realistic. I stand at the grocery store sometimes, and I see people in front of me who have families with kids, and $200, $250 to check out or more.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, my gosh, I'm glad my son is in his 40s now.
Yeah, it's, you know, when you start considering the costs of daycare, and you know, even daycare costs are rising extraordinarily, mainly because, you know, daycare is getting harder and harder to find.
Well, yeah, the challenges of just finding good daycare.
Mm-hmm. And COVID did not help with that either.
No.
And, you know, so along with inflation, you're also seeing, you know, households that, you know, they're struggling with food and utilities and actually housing themselves, you know, try to pay rent nowadays. And then, you know, you can extrapolate that to the 65 and older population that may be on a fixed income. You know, that income isn't rising as fast as other prices are. So those social determinants of health are going to be extremely important going forward. Not that they aren't now, but they're going to have to be part of our focus of programming going forward.
And, of course, you have physical aspects to that. If appropriate food is not available, appropriate housing is not available, you have an emotional aspect to that. If stress is caused because you don't know where your next meal is coming from, or you have to make that kind of legendary choice between your pills and eating.
Yes.
That stresses, so you've got an emotional tag to that too.
That's correct. So that's why it's very important to look at those social determinants of health. We do have in the book, in this 458-page book, there's a lot of information, data, and tables breaking that information down between age level, education level, income level, gender, so we can really take a really deep dive into looking at, you know, where those stressors are hitting.
Well, and you mentioned a few minutes ago that people don't seem as concerned with the cost of health care this time around as they did last time around. I suspect, though, that that's not because they're less concerned about that, but simply have become more concerned about other things, because health care, it's not as if it's gotten cheap all of a sudden.
It hasn't gotten cheap, but people have more access now with the Affordable Care Act and some of the plans that have come about with that. So the actual payment of it might be getting a little easier. There's still those high costs of copays and deductibles, but if you can't even get into a provider, those are secondary, you know, if there's not even a provider to access. And, you know, dental is going to be a huge issue going forward, you know, for our communities up here.
I have never understood why dental isn't a part of healthcare. I mean, are my teeth not part of my body? I've never understood why dental is just not included.
And dental health just leads to multiple issues for full body health. And, you know, we really struggle with the ratio of dental providers in our area. Usually downstate, I believe they have about 1,300 residents for every dentist. And up here, we've got some communities that are about 2,300 residents per dentist. So people can't even get in.
Yeah.
And it just leads to other health issues down the line.
Yeah, I just have never understood why that's just, my teeth are part of my body. My teeth should be covered by my health insurance. you have to buy, and you have to pay extra for it.
Yes, you do.
Which, of course, again, if you're low income, that leaves you at a point where maybe you're saying, well, I guess I'm going to have to take my chances.
Yes, and they have made dental a little bit more accessible, as far as some of the Medicaid plans out there now have that, or they're required for children. But it's still, if you don't have a dentist that'll take your insurance, you're just not going to get in.
Well, and of course, if a dentist is looking at a situation where they can provide care for this person at full rate and this person at a reduced rate through a health insurance program, something like that, I suppose there are some who will make a choice.
There may be some out there that would make that choice. I think they're just overwhelmed with the caseloads that they have right now.
Yeah, one of the things that I note in the report is, and it didn't surprise me like most of these things, is look at preventive health and addiction. We've done some things about addiction. We've pushed some things forward, I think, over the past 10 years, at least here in the Copper Country, but it's still an issue.
It is, and we believe that it's been exacerbated by COVID-19. If we look at some of the numbers comparing...
What about COVID-19 exacerbated it? Have we broken it down that far?
Not yet, but I would believe it's the isolation part of it. You know, you weren't going out.
Boredom?
Boredom, yes. That would
Boredom leads to drug use.
boredom could be.
Well, I say that flippantly, but that's been one of the focuses in major cities over the years. Mm-hmm. Is give our kids something to do so they don't get involved in things they're not supposed to be involved in. I suppose that it does work that way.
Well, we did see an increase in both heavy drinking and binge drinking in both females and males. So it's across the board. The other interesting fact, which wasn't surprising, was people that use marijuana more than doubled from the last assessment. Which...
Now, does that have more to do with the fact that that it's now available legally? There was a report that just came out nationally that, gee, what a surprise. Right. Marijuana use has skyrocketed in states where marijuana is legal. Gee, who'd have thunk?
Who'd have thought? And, one of the things I think, is going to be interesting going forward is to find out if, has it really jumped up that much, or is it just people are more comfortable answering that question, yes, no. Well, I think it's a little bit of both.
I would suggest there's a lot of that in there because, yeah. 5-6 years ago, you answered that question, yes, you were liable to get arrested.
Right, right.
And there was a stigma attached to it. And now the stigma is somewhat less and we start to see it fall away a little bit. I think it was City of Detroit maybe recently said New York City said they're no longer going to test their officers for marijuana use.
Yeah.
It's legal there for them to use it, and so, go ahead. And how do you, though, it is still a mood-altering drug, how do you determine whether or not somebody is altered? I mean, if I'm an employer, maybe I don't mind if you go on a Saturday and toke up, but I don't want you coming in halfway to the moon on Monday morning.
Yeah. I guess that's for employers to decide.
A little challenge for employers,
yes.
Because they don't have any other challenges that
they
have to deal with. How do we move to react to this increase in substance use? Do we think that maybe it's just going to back off kind of on its own as society has returned to normal? Or are there some people who got on that slope and now are going to have trouble getting off of it?
Well, I think this is our, canary in the coal mine, that where there's an issue out there and we need to address it. And, with the additional increase in marijuana use, I think prevention programming for the school-age population becomes even more important. Because now that, as we said, the stigma's gone away, it's gone away for them too. It's becoming a normalized thing, and do we want that? And how do we address that issue?
Have we made progress on the opioid issue?
I think what you'll find is that there are still some base issues with the opioids in our area. We still have a lot of use, but it's not always the opioids. It's meth, too, has been increasingly popular in our area. So there's a multitude. There's a whole cocktail of drugs out there that we need to be looking at.
Do we have appropriate facilities in place to help people deal with these addictions? Because one of the things we've tried to do over the past few years is understand that this is different than it was when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, we looked at this as being a moral failure. This was a personal, ethical, you're a evil drug user, you're a weak person, you're decrepit, you're worthless. Now we understand that this is chemical, this is physical, this is a brain issue. And we have to approach it a little bit differently. We've made some moves to try to do that. Are we in a position now to more effectively help these people?
Those seeds have been planted, I guess, for increasing treatment services in our area, but it's not enough. It really needs time to grow and expand, and particularly when people have maybe co-occurring issues with some behavioral or mental health issues, that's where we really stumble because we don't have services for either.
This is going to cost money. Where is that going to come from?
That's a great question. I'm hoping that with the opioid settlement monies that are coming through from the feds here, that our counties will have access to some of that money and be able to expand some programming. There again, we're at this point where we really need to look at, maybe we have the funding, now do we have the staff, how do we train staff? It's a vicious cycle that we're in right now, and it really takes a report like this community health needs assessment is a real good point for us to step off of and start doing that community health improvement planning process, where we'll take this data, we look at it as a community and decide, you know, what are our community's priorities? What does our community want us to work on? And how can we better work together? How can we make partnerships and networks to get this stuff done?
How can people get a copy of this report? How can they learn more about what's in this report? If they're interested in perhaps getting involved in the conversation, is there a way for them to do that?
So right now, the report is posted on our website. So that's www.wuphd.org.
Western UP Health Department.
www.wuphd.org. And like I said, it's 458 pages, so it might be a little bit difficult right now to download. We will be having some focus groups coming up. First, what we like to do is do a few meetings where we just describe and display the data, and then we will call for focus groups after that. And we usually partner with our local hospitals in Michigan Tech and Finlandia and stuff to do those.
All right, so people can kind of keep their ears and eyes open, hopefully have an opportunity if they want to get involved in this discussion as to how we can move forward based on the results of this exhaustive survey.
Yes.
That there will be opportunities. Kate Beer from the Western UP Health Department, thank you for your time on Copper Country Today.
Thank you for having me.